Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Let's go!
What's going on, people? Welcome back to Bingetown TV. This is Luke here, and for this episode of the podcast, we had the chance to sit down with one of the gods of fillery himself, Dominic Burgess, who plays Ember on Syfy's The Magicians. What a random way we ended up booking this interview, but you'll have to listen to hear the details of that full story. Dominic was a blast to talk to, and we even found a lot of non-The Magicians common ground to geek out on together. So let us know what you think of the conversation with the fillery icon himself, Dominic Burgess.
Look at that handsome man. Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
Oh my gosh, there's so many people. Hi.
How's it going?
I'm good.
Wow, that voice is pumping me up.
Yeah, it is. Oh my God, I can see it so much in his face.
What an iconic voice.
Oh, thank you. I'll take it. Forgive my mustache. I just recorded an audition that was I didn't need a mustache, but I was like, this could use a mustache.
the mustache was an inspired choice.
So how you been, man? How has the last year plus been, this weird COVID time?
Gosh, knock on wood, I feel terrible. Being like, oh, I've had a great year, but I knock on wood, have been very busy and very fortunate. And Dr. Death took up 6 months over winter. And then I just popped to Puerto Rico for a couple of weeks for Fantasy Island, and then was in Colombia for a little bit. And I'm recording an audiobook and have some other things sort of rolling along and pre-prep for a feature film that I want to direct. So things have been good. I've been very conscious about staying indoors and socially distancing. So I've sort of kept busy on my own, I guess.
Wow, happy to hear that. Where are you right now?
Right now, I'm in Los Angeles. This is home.
Oh, nice.
I just became an American citizen in April.
Wow.
Congrats.
What?
Love that. No, quick question. Do you go by Dominic or do you go by Dom?
Either or. Okay. I'll respond to both. Right. Usually I'm Dominic if I'm in trouble with my parents. Then I'll be like, Dominic? But otherwise, Dom is fine.
You're not in trouble with us today, yeah. So we'll call you Dom.
Hell no. So the big first question, I guess, since we'll talk about magicians for a little while. Are you a Magicians fan? Have you seen the show?
I am. Okay. Yeah. I didn't see any of it before I did that first episode, because none of it had aired before I went to do the end of season one. And then because I was a fan of Buffy and X-Files and Angel and all that sort of fantasy genre stuff beforehand. And so I was like, yeah, I'll check this out. And then I fell in love with them. I was like, oh, this is a fun show. This is a great show to be a part of.
So that brings up a question I have, is how was the character of Ember pitched to you on the casting call? Like, when you were thinking about going for this show, what was the character description? Did they give you much, or did they just say like horny god ram of magical land?
Gosh, I don't remember exactly what the breakdown was. I think I remember it saying that it required prosthetics and that he was a god and that he was pretty flamboyant and out there, and it might have said that he had sex with nymphs or everything. I think I still have, it was a self tape. It wasn't some, I think I was working in New Orleans at the time. And so I had to put myself on tape, and I think my self tape is still up on Vimeo. And at that time, rather than just a mustache, I had a huge beard that kept growing and growing, because I would book a role and then they'd be like, oh my gosh, yeah, keep the beard. And it kept growing and growing and growing. So in that first season, Ember's beard is my own beard. And then in subsequent seasons, I was clean shaven and they were lace beards.
Let me jump in on that because I actually did get a chance to watch it on Vimeo. And it's it's funny because it starts off where you saying I'm 6'5 and I'm happy with prosthetics. So you did. But I mean, the tape is phenomenal. The audition is literally Ember. It doesn't seem like they changed anything while you were actually acting on set. It was the scene where they meet you and it was perfect right from the start.
Don't even remember if, you know, sometimes you get hired on something and, you know, you prepare all your lines and you're like, okay, I'm good, I'm set. And then on Sunday night at 11 o'clock, you get an email that's like, surprise, here's your new lines. See you at 5 a.m. But for this, thankfully, they did not.
It was a great to watch. Yeah. Sorry, Luke, jump in.
I think this would be a good time to give the audience a little background to how we actually came about this interview. So, Kathleen, if you want to give that story.
Yeah, of course. So I always try and make Jimmy weird cakes for his birthday. So this year, since we're so obsessed with the Magicians and Bingetown covered season 5, I was like, have you brought me little cakes? And I made little cupcakes and put like little magician stickers, little bunny stickers. And then I put have you brought me little cakes on it for his birthday. And then
you do individual cakes, because now I've seen like people will do cupcakes but they'll put like a spread across all of them, so to look at it looks like one big cake, and then sort of people take the cupcakes from underneath and they're individual cakes.
No, I did like so you could see them separately, so they were little cakes.
And each individual cupcake had its own decoration. Yeah. And it was good. I loved it.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Good.
Yeah, and of course, we put that picture up on social media, and Dom here liked it. Yeah. And the rest is history. So that's how we got here.
The rest is history.
Yeah, I was actually going to ask a question about the audition process, but Jimmy answered it, because the quirkiness and eccentricity of Ember is absolutely perfection. Now I need to go on Vimeo and watch that, because I'm glad that
it's the same.
That.
It's so good.
I'm glad that they probably watched
that. Yeah, I think I remember sometimes when I audition, I'll be like, oh, I'll dress like kind of appropriate to the character. And I was like, I don't know what a Ram dress is like. But I think I just had like a pink shirt and I just left like it sort of unbuttoned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With the cuffs undone. So it was kind of flowy and frilly. But I remember it being a fun audition. And I think I might be lying. I might be lying so much. Maybe they had another audition for me a few episodes beforehand that I couldn't do because I was filming out of town or doing something and the dates wouldn't have worked out. And then Ember came along maybe a little bit later.
Wow.
I could have been someone else.
No, man. That was absolutely meant to be.
Yeah. So
totally meant to be.
Let me ask you a question about the makeup and costuming and prosthetics. How long were you in the makeup trailer for each episode?
A long time. About 5.5 hours. It's
wow.
I think on Instagram there might be a time lapse video somewhere, but it's a long process, especially after that first season when the facial hair wasn't my own, because then they'd have to glue all that stuff on as well. So they tried a couple of things. I flew up to Vancouver and they were trying just to put the horns on a bald cap. But the horns were too heavy and it would make the latex tear around the crown of my head. So they had to glue my hair down and then they would put a helmet. They would glue a helmet to my head with two metal studs in that could hold the horns. Then the latex piece came from my nose up around my forehead and flopped over with a hairpiece on. The ears were separate pieces and then they would glue extra hair down. And then the legs
were sort of foam
trousers.
Wow.
With stilettos that had the heel cut away so it would give that Ram shape. And I'm a big guy. I'm 6'5 and I'm 300 pounds. And being on the balls of my feet all day, like in stilettos without the heels, but it was a long old process. And then they had to glue sort of the hair from the goat legs onto my stomach. And then they would do the makeup and make sure that latex piece matched my skin tone. And then they would stir up coffee grounds and put coffee on me. So Amber actually smells of coffee on set.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Nothing like walking on the balls of your feet all day and then having to somehow get out of all of that.
That's why I have the staff. If I didn't have that staff to walk around with, oh boy. I think Nico, who plays Umba, had an easier time because he's like 6'5", but probably maybe 200 pounds. He's sort of really lanky and skinny. And also, because he was the smart ram and he wore clothes, it was a quicker process for him because his pants were easier to conceal and his, yeah, good old Nico. Good for him.
He also got to be human for a little while too.
He did.
Yeah.
They were talking to me as well about that. They were, Sarah Gamble was saying like, you know, we considered for the last season, maybe having your apparition be human. And then we didn't.
We wanted to make it a little bit easier on you with the makeup, but then we didn't.
We didn't. Well, but they gave me kittens, which was almost
better. Oh, the kittens, yeah.
Much better.
That's a perfect transition into my question here is when I was looking into the credits that you get as Ember for The Magicians, it blew my mind that you are technically only in 5 episodes.
I agree.
A voiceover in another episode or two, but like just appearance wise, you were only in 5 episodes. And that the reason it's so crazy to think about that is because Ember does so many things that just there's just a huge butterfly effect of what's going on in the Magician's universe. So I guess my question to you is when they pitched this to you, were you expecting to be in it more, or was there kind of just like a short-sighted season by season view of how many episodes Ember was going to be in?
No. Oh boy, this is a good question. Open this. Can of worms. It's not a can of worms. The tea. Let me
Kathleen loves it.
I mean, to answer your question, I feel like as an actor, I'm what you would call a journeyman actor. I'm a guest star actor that will sort of jump from project to project, and I'm not really financially in any kind of position for someone to pitch me something and for me to go, let me think about that. It's especially at that time, you know, 5-6 years ago, it was like, I've got an audition, I'll do it. Now I have a little bit more leeway if an audition comes in to be able to say, I don't know if I want to do that. But I mean, I would have done it anyway, because the material was so fun. And so I did that first episode and things moved pretty fast. I think I booked it, and then I think it was in New Orleans, and within a couple of days I was in Vancouver doing the prosthetic fitting and getting the molds done. And then I think 2 weeks after that we were on set and we were shooting, and it was just one day. And then I read the books, I read the novels. And then in my ego head, I was like, ha ha, he's in the books until the very end. And he becomes, and Quentin becomes a dragon and they fight. And this will be fun. And what a fun ride.
Huzzah.
And then they were like, oh no, we're killing you in season 2. And I was like, oh, okay, that's fine. You can do that. So yeah, you know, as a guest star actor, sometimes I feel like you don't have the liberty to ask like, hey, so what's going to happen to my character? Because sometimes creators and writers are very guarded about spoilers and they don't want anything getting out. So I didn't know I was dying until maybe 2 weeks before I flew up to do that episode where Quentin stabbed me. And then, you know, I was like, okay, I'm dead. I die in so many of my shows. And then I had the call maybe 18 months later to say, hey, they want you back for the season 4 premiere. So I was like, okay, that's nice. They killed me, but they still care. So yeah, bit of a mix of stuff there. I feel like I went on a tangent on that answer.
That's great.
Your appearances are always epic. So we're glad they brought you back. I mean, Ember's death dominoed into one of the best seasons of television of all time. So thank you for that.
Oh, I had nothing to do with it, but you're welcome.
Magic was lost because you were killed. But yeah, no, your appearances in 4 and 5, five was the pickles, right?
Yeah. 5 was pickles.
That was an iconic scene too.
5 was pickles. I have a feeling that by that point, they weren't sure if they were going to get picked up for another season. And so the writers were like, well, let's bring back our favorites before the end. because I feel like I had a conversation with Chris Fisher about that. Someone was mentioning it. They were like, well, it's going to be on the fence and we're not sure. But I was glad to come back again. That was like a real fun day.
Yeah. I mean, we love that too. It was a nice surprise. I feel like for you to come back in season 5. And I'm still thinking about the fact that he was only in 5 episodes.
That's crazy.
My mind. Cause we talk about the magicians, why we love the show so much is that there's so many amazing characters and they all work so well together. So for you to make that impact in 5 episodes with like an all-star cast like this is a nice little,
I think also it's something, something that happens on Always Sunny in Philadelphia as well. I did one episode of Always Sunny.
Psycho Pete.
But yeah. But
and
because,
we're from Philly, so.
Yeah.
But because the characters had sort of been talking about him for a couple of seasons before he appeared, I feel like it sort of worms its way into people's psyche. And I think with the same thing with the magicians, because they're looking for Ember's tomb for a little while, and then they're mentioning him in other episodes, so he sort of looms large over things, even though he's not a part of things, I guess.
Yeah, the lore just kind of builds on itself, but it's just, when I think of the magicians, you're one of the first characters I think of just because you're synonymous with Fillory, which is half of the show, and a huge part of why it's so magical and everybody loves it. But the fact that you own 2 titles of 2 different season finales.
Yeah.
In the season 1, episode 13, it's Have You Brought Me Little Cakes? And then season 2, episode 13... We have brought you little cakes. So 2 of those episodes that you're in.
I think also so much of the imagery is there right from the beginning, you know, with the clock, with the rams. And I think it just seeps in. And I think they mention him even in the first episode. I think Quentin's mentioning him with Julia when he's talking about the books and the Gods of Fillory. And so, yeah, he sort of just looms out there.
I mean, even Lev Grossman's books, people went into the show loving the books. So, of course, you're a character in the books as well. So they're just waiting for you to show up. So that's another good well-known.
And I heard you say that you did read the books, the source material by Lev himself. And that's one of the biggest difference I had in my head when I was reading through them is just how they portray Ember in the show versus him being pretty much an actual ram in the books. So that's just such a huge difference, and it's great because I kind of think of you before I think of the ram now because of how your performance was. So it's kind of like Lev took it off again.
Yeah, I think also so much of that comes down to television budget as well. If it was going to be, you know, 3 feature films, then they might have been able to afford, you know, like, let's have a talking ram and double it in size. And because I remember reading, I can't remember which book it was, that he's sort of on a mountain, he's on a mountain pass and he's sort of clambering up a mountain. I was like, I have no idea how they're going to do that. and then was there a discussion? I don't remember if there was a phone call. It might have been a discussion with the special effects house, with Masters Effects, who did all the prosthetics. When I went up to do the first episode of the second season, I have a feeling that then they were like, hey, so you got a twin and we don't know if you're going to play both of them or if we need to hire another actor. If it's going to be you in both roles, it's going to be easier on us because we have the mold of your head and we have everything that fits you already. And then we just make a different version of you with a clean latex piece and we give you a shirt and pants. But then it's going to take longer to film because we have to shoot all your stuff. And then we have to clean you, and then we have to reverse the shots, and then we have to have someone standing in with a horn in front. So they were talking about that, I think. But then I think very quickly they found Nico, who I knew from an acting class already.
Nice.
That would have been very interesting if they had you playing both roles.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they, you know, they do it with Star Trek and Data and Lore, and it's one of those tropes that they do with the Buffy bot and Buffy and
I'll just find
all that
this
geeky
one
stuff.
This one out here. Are you more like Ember or Umber in real life? I feel like I know the answer after talking to you for like 15 minutes, but
boy, bit of A, bit of B. Okay. Bit of B. My boyfriend he won't murder me. He knows how I operate. I don't like to plan things very much. Like if we go on vacation, I'm like, let's just see what happens and let's just like take things as they come and explore and do whatever we want. But the underside of me is like things like my Blu-ray collection is alphabetized and in order, and books and everything. Then I'm kind of organized with stuff, but everything else I'm kind of like, yeah.
That is definitely a bit of A bit of B, because yeah, it's alphabetized good to have Blu-ray is pretty crazy. There's a lot of Blu-rays behind you.
I used to work at a store called HMV in England for 3 years after I graduated from drama school. And oh boy, we got 50% on everything, even things that were on sale. So I picked up DVDs and stuff that I didn't even really want, but I was like, but it's £1.50.
Add it to the collection.
I left my parents with so many DVDs back home, and then I restarted my collection maybe 8 years ago now, once I started working regularly.
See, that's cool. The only issue is the DVD players, Blu-ray players feel so obsolete now. You have to be very deliberate with them. I hate that too. I hate that too. But
do you know how I'll tell you how much of an umber I am? Should I? I might get in trouble. No, I'm going to do it. I'll tell you what I'm doing.
This is
I just don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to get in trouble with Disney. So because I'm a collector, so I got my Marvel films up here.
Amazing. Love it.
But Marvel were like, we're not going to release the TV shows on Blu-ray. And then a bit of my soul dies. And so then I go crazy and I make my own Blu-ray covers and my own DVDs.
That's incredible.
So that
awesome.
I know that they're in my collection. So that's my real umber side. That's my
That's really cool though. I like that.
Anal umber. I used to do the same thing with Buffy and X-Files and Star Trek back home in England. I would press record and then pause it when the commercial breaks came on, and then press record again, and then I would make my own VHS covers and tapes. And
I love
a crazy person.
No, I consider passionate nerddom. That's what it is.
We love it. You're talking to the right people here.
How do you make the covers? I'm sorry, Jimmy, but how do you?
No problem.
So what's it? What?
How do you make the cover?
I have an art package. I did a short film a couple of years ago called Sam Did It, and I wanted to make Blu-ray covers, and I found this template online. And then there are other people like me out there in the world who are like, hey, you've got this artwork for WandaVision. And so I would copy and paste and then
send it
to a facility to print and just
Are you caught up in all of your MCU stuff?
I sure am.
We're covering it on the podcast. Luke, Kyle. Well, actually, we have three other members of the pod, and we have the other two cover it with me. So, Luke, Kyle, and Kathleen, hold your ears for a second because they're not caught up. Technically, with Loki and What If, you were on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and everyone's talking about the multiverse. You're canon. You're canon now.
Oh boy, I want to be kind of canon.
Yeah, right.
I called my manager and was okay. Man, if they're looking for a Ben Grimm, or if they're looking
that would
for
be
a
awesome.
Beast. I would love to be a Beast or a Ben Grimm, but I imagine they'll go with big names. But yeah, I would love to be.
You're a god of fillery. That's a big name.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and you have experience with prosthetics.
Yeah,
exactly.
6'5", you're already big. You don't need any tricks of the camera or anything like that.
Right. Yeah, listen up, Marvel.
We'll give them a call after this. Oh, that's amazing, though. I love the DVD covers.
Let's talk about quickly back to the magician. So Luke was remembering you kind of giving a voiceover and talking about, because one of the points of contention, as you've seen the show, is Quentin giving a vial of his blood to a witch and then it never goes anywhere. But in your voiceover, you say, don't worry, we'll get back to that. But I'm sure it would have come back later. I mean, they killed him all, spoiler alert. So I don't know how that would have came back. Who knows? But I just watched a video on YouTube for the first time trying to find which episode that voiceover is in. We couldn't find it. But the video on YouTube is actually incredible with canon stuff that they do not say in episodes. How Ember was controlling things behind the scenes and domino affecting I've said that twice already today, but domino effect of things that happen in the show. But we didn't know that Ember himself was controlling it behind the scenes, which is so freaking cool.
I think if I'm remembering rightly, because I remember doing the table read and I think it's an 8-minute monologue. And then I remember doing it at the table read and getting into the booth and they'd already made that sequence. Mm-hmm. And so then I had to talk really fast and everything became like, oh my gosh. But we did it. We did it. I think it was at the end of season two, but I don't think that voiceover opening made it onto the Blu-rays or the DVDs. So I think it only existed on the Ed episodes on Sci-Fi.
I think you're right, because I was looking earlier on the Netflix, every episode that you were credited for, and I couldn't find it. But then when you search it on YouTube, it comes up right away, and it's literally incredible. You are hilarious in it. There's just, there is actual canon information that's dropped in it that I didn't remember. And I guess we as a podcast haven't really talked about, but like there's something that you say in that that connects the dots in the background, and it literally enhances the first two seasons significantly, in my opinion. And I'm just mind blown that we didn't really deep dive this earlier, but I just love that. It's 3 minutes of you being hilarious, just dropping good knowledge. Yeah. You know?
Wait, is it 3 minutes? Oh man, it feels like I felt like I was in that booth forever.
They may have shortened it maybe, but it's like around 3.5. But I watched it at work today and I was like texting the boys. I was like, I have chills. This is the best video I've ever seen.
Oh, good.
But I do want to say, because Kathleen mentioned it at the beginning of that introduction, but one of the things that I always cling to, and this was a big theory conversation starter since season two happened, and it was about the Quentin giving his blood to the Candy Witch. And we recently talked to Olivia Taylor Dudley, who plays Alice, for those listening, and she couldn't give me an explanation of what the showrunners were thinking with that. So can you just lie to me and tell me something?
Gosh, again, especially when you're a guest star actor and you just pop in and out. I never, like, I would have seen the scripts for episode 4 and episode 13, and then I would never have information on any other script. And so when we went in for table reads, I would always be like, is there anything I need to know that what is going on leading up to this point? And everyone would be like, ah, you don't need to know.
Don't worry about it.
Okay. So no, I have, and because I think that was the first episode of season 2, right? Where he goes to the Candy Witch? Mm-hmm. Yep. So the very first scene?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, that's what they released at Comic-Con or something? Yes. No, I have no idea. Mm. I have no idea.
That video would have been a perfect Comic-Con video. Like the summer leading into season 3 San Diego Comic-Con, that would have been phenomenal. They didn't show that at the New York Comic-Con that I went to, but that makes sense that they showed that at San Diego, because that is so good. It's a perfect
And just to, you know, the best line of it is right towards the end. You get a nice picture of Josh on the throne in Fillory, and you have Ember's voiceover saying, just sit back with a nice pipe of marijuana. Just like moves on. So good.
We also listened to it right before this and just were giggling at it. And then you popped up and we were like, oh.
There it is.
Okay, we can't finish this episode without talking about at least the essence scene. It's one of the greatest. And even though you're not in the scene where Alice like slugs it, I mean, that whole sequence is just quintessential magician. So funny. You played it so well. Your opening scene was incredible. Have you brought me little cakes? And they're just like, no.
That scene, because I was in makeup for 5.5-6 hours, and then I think they brought me in really early. I think I was in at 3 a.m. to be ready on set at 9 a.m. and start filming at 10 or whatever we were doing. And because it was a pretty, I mean, not long scene, but maybe 5-6 pages. So I was like, okay, we're gonna be there for 10 hours. And they shot it out so fast. They were so efficient on that first day. They had, I think, 3 cameras pointing up at the throne of different sizes, a close up, a medium, and a wide. And then they did the reverse on Quentin and Julia. And I feel like we were there for 2 hours and they were like, you're done, go home, bye. so fast. And I don't think, I think I did know that Olivia chugged it, because I think we had read, I think, the last 2 episodes in Wongo at the table read. And I think they were in Vancouver at the time and I was in LA doing the table read. And I think there was a mass like, when it happened.
That would have been pretty funny to just see that live. Like, oh, wow, that's mine.
That's what I missed too. You know, it's funny you say, like, you would have liked to have seen that. I miss that stuff. I love extra features on Blu-rays. I love DVD features. deleted scenes and outtakes and director's commentaries are my favorite things.
Oh, they're so
good. I love seeing those snippets of things. I miss that.
Well, I mean, Always Sunny in Philadelphia has arguably the best blooper reels. So I'm sure you enjoy some of those. If you ever catch those on YouTube, they're incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a great experience. Sunny's a, again, I've been very lucky in the terms of everything that I've worked on. Even Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was just one day and so fast. But when I turned up on set, they had switched directors for some reason. And they were like, hey, so your director for the day is Roxanne Biggs Dawson. And I was like, oh, no, I'm from Star Trek Voyager. because I'm a big Star Trek guy. And so that was, I feel like I've been very lucky in terms of everything I've done.
So while we're on this page, I want to ask my last, probably my last non-magician's question here. But speaking of other things that you had listed on your IMDb, you know, obviously The Magicians, Shields,
The Flash,
Always Sunny, The Flash, things we talked about. Mm-hmm. I was a huge fan of The Leftovers, and I that was such a good show for three seasons, one and done. And also a fun one when we were younger is Teen Wolf.
Teen Wolf
appeared in there, and we're diehard fans of J.R. Bourne. You know, in the same, you know, shooting scene with him, but I'm just, it was just incredible to see that listed there, and I had to bring up J.R. Bourne's name if I can.
So. Yeah, gosh, when did I do Teen Wolf? I feel like Teen Wolf was squeezed in between something else that I was doing, and it was so fast, and we weren't sure if we were going to be able to do it. And then they were like, it's going to be just a couple of hours and one morning, we'll get you in, we'll get you out. And I think I remember the actual filming of it was much longer than what ended up on screen, because we were walking through a couple of corridors and getting in there, and then there was a buildup for something. It was longer on the page than it was on, which happens all the time.
Just an incredible resume of shows that resonate with our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Exactly.
Is sci-fi fantasy genre what you want to continue doing moving forward, or would you like to get into something different?
Oh man, I love it. I love, like I said, I was brought up on Buffy and X-Files and Twin Peaks and Star Trek, and I'm a fan of those things, and Battlestar Galactica. Mm-hmm. I love Game of Thrones, all those genre shows. I know that, you know, they're going to reboot Battlestar Galactica, and I've had multiple conversations with my manager to be like, let's get on Lord of the Rings.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I'm just happy to be working in general.
I was just going to say, we do have an eighth spot on this podcast if you're ever looking for some extra fun work. Cause it seems like every show you list it is something that we would love to talk about.
I'm so excited for Lord of the Rings, and they just released that one image. Mm-hmm. And already I was like, oh my gosh, I have to listen to the soundtrack right now and just stare at this picture for 3 hours.
Are you a Wheel of Time fan by any chance? Wheel of Time?
Oh, I don't know Wheel of Time. Someone mentioned it to me. I think an old friend from drama school, Sebastian, mentioned Wheel of Time and said that I should check that out.
I think it's the second highest fantasy book series sold of all time behind Lord of the Rings. And it's perfectly, you know, coming in after Game of Thrones to fill in that slot of just popular high fantasy. It's going to be competing with Lord of the Rings, and it's made by Amazon. So I think that's going to be one of the shows you're definitely going to have.
Oh, it is, huh?
Yeah, and that's
November.
Yeah, I was going to say pretty soon.
I heard Lord of the Rings, they moved season 2 filming out of New Zealand.
They did.
Is that
They're in New Zealand right now, and they just moved production to the UK, where someone is legal to work.
Get that manager working hard for you.
we'll do what we can on this side with our small following.
I feel like the second that I saw that the Deadline article that it was moving to the UK, I just like flipped open my laptop and wrote a very civil email to my UK agents. It was like, hey, I just saw this article. Wouldn't this be fun? But like,
I would be so happy if you got me on that show. I would be very appreciative.
Anything. I have a show in England. There's an old show called Casualty. And it's not like a great show by any means. It's just that I've watched it since I was 8 years old. And it's kind of like the UK's Grey's Anatomy. It's been running since like 1986. And I still get the BritBox subscription on Amazon so that I can watch Casualty on a Saturday night. And that's my, I told my agents, I was like, I don't care. I'll go back and I'll do Casualty. I'll go back and I'll do an episode of Casualty. No doubt.
I hope that happens for you.
Me too.
Yeah, that would be amazing.
You are exactly the type of actor I envisioned myself being if I ever went down that life path where you just seem so like you have these ideas of what you want to do and you could just tell you're passionate about it. I'm so happy that you were the one that we got that decided to be Ember on the show, because it's just great. It's great having fans of the material play in the show itself rather than it being a job.
Yeah, I love that too. When actors care about the material and they are a champion for that character and the show. I got to do Star Trek Picard, and I mean, I openly wept with joy when I was like, oh my God, I'm going to work with Patrick Stewart, and Jonathan Frakes is going to direct, and oh my gosh, Jerry Ryan's going to be there, 7 of 9. And on set, the first day on set, I remember I was crying, and then the prosthetics people came up and they're like, are you okay? Are your contacts annoying you? And I was like, yeah, it's the contacts.
It's totally the contacts.
Yeah. It's funny because like on a lower scale but still exciting for us, like we started this podcast because we love TV and we get to talk to people like you who we're obsessed with. Like we laugh with your character every time we've seen it. All of us have seen The Magicians more enough times, you know. Mm-hmm. And it never gets old. It's amazing. We've talked to Rick Worthy, we talked to Olivia Taylor Dudley. It's just, and everyone loves their character and fights for their character, like you said. It's it's so refreshing and it's so rewarding that we do this podcast and we get to talk to you guys, and that's like you're working with these actually incredible people. Yeah. And we feel the same with you guys. We're like, yes, we get to talk to them.
I was so excited to meet Rick Worthy because I had watched there's a documentary called The Guy Who Was In That Thing. And if you don't know it, it interviews a bunch of guest star actors, like actors that have never been sort of series regulars or broken out of anything, and that the general public would sort of walk past you and be like, oh, is that, that's that guy. That's, oh, yeah, that's that guy. I don't know his name, but that's him.
Yeah.
And Rick Worthy is on there. And when I moved to, I mean, still to this day, I don't have a car in LA. And I remember Rick Worthy was on this documentary, and he's talking and he's like, you know, I didn't have a car and I was getting around on the buses. And I was like, oh, this guy, he knows. And yeah, the first time I met Rick, I was like, oh my gosh, I love this documentary, The Guys in the Thing, and the car story. And I get it with Simpatico.
Yeah. He was amazing.
That's amazing.
He's the coolest. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He has a great voice. Oh my gosh.
He blew our mind as soon as we got on. He does the Let's Do Some Goddamn Magic. And we're just like, whoa.
Very two iconic voices, yours and his.
True. Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you. Changed his. I feel like your voice sounds exactly like Ember.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty rare actually I'm going to go dig a hole. This isn't my native voice. I mean, this is how I talk now, I guess, in general. My native accent is from a town called Stoke-on-Trent. So if I Skype with my parents or if I get a little tipsy, then my native northern accent will come out and I'll speak to my parents and be like, hey, up, how's it going? How's the weather? It's all right. And then this is, but I don't often get a chance to just have my regular voice. On camera, it's always an American accent or some sort of accent, or if it's The Good Place, it's Australian or Slovakian in Santa Clarita Diet. It's a whole mix of stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll always try and fight to get a British accent in there if I can.
Yeah. I was going to say really dumb anecdote, but I'm going to say it anyway. Have you seen Mayor of Easttown?
Yeah.
So they're from Delco, you know, she had Kate Winslet was like, it was the hardest accent I've ever had. That's where we're from.
That's Delco. Where we're from.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
My voice kind of changed too. The A's I don't say as Delco anymore after I went to college. But when I get drunk, my girlfriend always goes, there's the Delco girl. I'm like, come on, what?
Well, yeah, one of our biggest things is we say water instead of water, a lot of us. And right away when I went to out of college, when I went on my first business trip for work, I'm in Kansas City and I said, can I get a water, please? And the waitress is like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
and
man.
Now ever since then, I do pretty much say water. Like I have changed it a lot, but it's funny how that works.
I have to change it because I'll say, hey, I'll just have a glass of water. And then people will be like, a what? Like, what? And I worked for my day job for 5 years when I first got to LA. I worked at a movie theater called the Arclight, and we would have popcorn with fresh butter. And I would always be like, do you want butter on your popcorn? And they'd be like, what? Do I want what on my popcorn? What? And then it would be butter. You want butter on your popcorn. And they'd be like, oh, yeah, butter. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's what I want.
You really nailed that, that demanding American customer voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've lived it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so funny.
So we don't want to keep you too long, but we do probably.
No, please. You're good. I have another thing at 5 o'clock, but whatever you want to talk about, I'm here.
Awesome. Because we want to get some basic questions out of here, right? Because yeah. I want to, you know, back to the magician, just some nerdy behind the scenes kind of questions. And it's always the scariest thing when you're about to interview somebody and you ask them if they're a fan of the material. And like, thankfully you are. So if you're comfortable with it, I'm going to ask about 4 or 5 rapid fire questions about the magicians itself. Just favorites, like seasons and episodes, nothing like quizzy or anything like that. No. Just to see what kind of fan you are and who you really gravitated towards.
Mm-hmm.
So who is your favorite non-Ember character?
Oh, boy. I love Margot so much.
Mm. Yes. Yes.
And she's so fun to work with. And Summer is... I just... yeah. Yeah. I would have to say it's... Yeah.
I think every
person we've talked to has said Summer just came out of her shell after season one because of how they wrote her character, and she just owned the role incredibly well, and everybody that's worked with her loves her and says she's just fantastic.
Yeah. Everyone on there was so delightful. It's, you know, I've had experiences where you turn up on set, and again, especially, you know, as a guest star actor, when you just go in for an episode or a couple of episodes, sometimes you have to go into an environment and sort of read the room and the set to see if it's like a serious set or if you go and sit in your chair in the corner and you wait until you're filming. And the magician set was always so warm and so welcoming and so friendly, and it makes such a difference when it's that kind of environment.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, it's the best.
To piggyback off that question, if you could have played another character besides Ember, and Umber does not count, you have to pick someone else.
Oh boy. Oh man. I mean, I would hate to steal a role from Hale.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, there are roles, because that, like, my brain then splits into, like, pragmatically, like, I would love to play that role, but I know physically I wouldn't be what would be, like, right on screen for that role. But sure, I'd steal Hale's role.
Yeah. Elliot is the number two behind Margo.
Yeah.
Actually, I could see you as Bacchus.
Yeah, Bacchus.
Oh, that would be cool. I would like that. Another guy.
I would have loved to have played Umber as well and had that opportunity to, you know, do the back and forth. That would have been very cool. With myself, which would have been cool. I think, I don't know if this is true or if this is hearsay or speculation or things that have come through the pipeline. I feel like I read that when, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on his name. Brent Spiner played Data and Lore in the same episodes. I think you have to get double the fee because you're playing two different characters. Okay. And so, like, from that point of view, I was like, that'd be
I'll take it.
But also from, like, an actor point of view, it'd be like, that'd be fun. That'd be nice. But I'm sure that the hours would have been horrific. Yeah.
You would have earned that double fee of having to do double prosthetics.
Oh, yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. I think there are pictures on Instagram. Can't remember which day it was. There was one day that was really, really long. And it might have been, I think, originally the end of season two, all that stuff in the throne room was going to be over 2 days. And the director was like, no, let's get it all in one. And it ended up being, I think, 6 hours in makeup and then another 13, 14 hours of filming and then 2 hours to get it off. And my eyes with the contact lenses were wrecked and my skin was sort of peeling off my face a little bit. I'll see if I can find that. Facebook personal. There's the time lapse. It exists. If you scroll, I don't know if I'm pretty sure I posted it. I'll see if I can find it for you guys. But there's a post somewhere where, like, I look like Ripley from Alien 3 with the bloodshot eyes and like just looking like I've crashed in an EEV.
So what do you do when you're sitting there for 6 hours? Do you have like an AirPod in or something?
No, I mean, Sarah and Arlo and Jason were the folks at Masters FX, and, you know, everyone's there super early, but everyone's in good spirits, and we talk. Sarah has cats, and so I'd always ask her about her cats and share stories about my cats, And we would take it in turns in terms of what we would play on the speaker system. I'm a soundtrack guy, so I'd be like, play soundtracks. Mm-hmm. And then I feel like Sarah would be like, let's play some 80s music. She's from Scotland. And then Arlo would play like heavier metal stuff that would come in later in the process.
Keep you awake.
Yeah. But I love that process anyway. It's kind of therapeutic in a way, like, you know, just it's kind of fun. And normally if you're not in there for too long, when they peel it all off, it's like getting a facial because it opens up all your pores and stuff. So it's kind of nice.
It's a spa day.
Yeah, you're in the spa.
So next one I have here is, what was your favorite season of the show or a specific favorite episode?
Oh boy. You know, I always love first episodes. I always love pilots because they set the tone and get everything going. From like an ego-driven point of view, I still feel like my first appearance was most special. Mm-hmm. They built that throne room and it was gorgeous. And that was my first time in Vancouver. And then from another selfish standpoint, that's where I met my boyfriend. The first time I went up to Vancouver to do the Magicians. And he was working on, he's a stuntman, and he was working on War for the Planet of the Apes. And,
oh, wow.
So they, on the soundstage or the soundstage next to it, they were doing War for the Planet of the Apes, and there were taco trucks outside. And then we got talking, and I'm in Ember Horns and he's in sort of post-apocalyptic stuff. And yeah, we met and we went for our first date, and here we are.
The rest
6
is
years
history.
Later.
There you go. That's
yeah.
Great.
So that first episode is always going to be very special to me, that my first jaunt up. Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Was that the one with Woody Harrelson? Is Woody Harrelson the main of War of the Planet of the Apes, or is that the one before Woody Harrelson joins the cast? I'm not sure if you know.
It's the third one. It's the last one. I have to look.
It might be. It
the
might
Blu-ray
be.
Collection.
I know. It's the third one. The third War for third Planet of the Apes. The remake, not the 70s
right,
ones.
Right, right, right.
Wow, that's such a good story. I love that meet cute. I love love.
Yeah, that's
awesome. I know. And then the hotel that I was staying at, it's called the Sutton Place, and there was a British pub across the street called the Winking Judge, which is now closed down. But yeah, we went for our first date at the Winking Judge
love
in
it.
Vancouver.
That's great.
I do want to say that in terms of like your answer where you initially said the pilot of The Magicians, I'm super biased, of course, because I love this show. I podcast about it. But I think The Magicians pilot is one of the best pilots into a fantasy genre on TV in general, especially just it was just incredible. Like just how they brought in the Voldemort character so early and just you know, destroyed our Dumbledore character being Dean Fogg. And it just showed you just like all of these different power dynamics, the incredible magic system, in my opinion, the most relatable main characters ever in Quentin Coldwater that everybody just gravitates towards. It was just that's top three of mine.
Mm. Yeah. Pilots have such a hard job. You know, they have so much heavy lifting to do in terms of establishing the world, especially when it's a genre show, establishing the world and the character and the stakes and what's at stake and getting those relationships out. But a good part, I mean, still to this day, regardless of what anyone thinks about Lost, the Lost pilot is, oh my gosh, the first 10 minutes of that show is like, oh, okay, I'm in. Mm-hmm. I'm into the show. Mm-hmm. Whatever happened, I'm in.
We love Lost here. We love
yeah, we
Lost.
Do.
Yeah, me too. I love Lost. I love Lost.
I binged it for the first time over COVID and I absolutely loved it.
What was your opinion on the ending?
I think a lot of people misunderstood it and it was incredible. And I wasn't around when it was live and it was the War talk, but I thought it was amazing.
I love it too. I mean, again, my brain splits in two because then from an analytical point of view, I'm like, wait a minute, what are the answer to these questions? But then from an emotional point of view, I'm like, oh, everyone's together and I like this and the music.
The music's so
good.
Lost ends, but it was incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like I have that too a little bit, like the analytical side and then the emotional side, but the emotional side always ends up winning out.
Yeah.
With like telling the movies and stuff. It's just, if I feel good at the end, I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Another perfect example of that I heard you mention earlier, you were a fan of Game of Thrones, is that show was like the most important thing to me in my entire life. But once it ended, I was like one of the most pissed off people. But at the same time, when I have conversations, I still say it's a top two show of all time for me. Which
oh, me too. I mean, again, to keep it.
It's over there.
I have the Blu-rays, and I love that show so much, and I hear the criticisms, and I hear all of that, but it's still such a massive undertaking, mm-hmm. and such good storytelling. And in my heart of hearts, I wish that it had been mm-hmm. 13 episodes longer, and it had really just fleshed out that last season, even if they could have just done 5-6 episodes more to get the turns for those characters to really totally set up. Yeah. But it was such a formative show for 8 years of my life that I was like, mm-hmm. oh my gosh, this show. Yeah. I can't be mad.
Even if I don't love the content fully of season 8, you can tell I'm getting a little emotional, my voice just cracked. I just feel like the world itself and just like the event that it was is such a testament to it.
Yep.
I
mean,
we and Luke made a death pool with our friend Dave. There was 20 something people in it. I spent like hours each week writing really long emails, summer emails, like Easter eggs that people might have missed and songs and all this kind of stuff. And even if the content wasn't amazing, the 8th season for me was still such an event. It's such a big part of my life that I still liked it.
I mean, we literally
show becomes so big, like Game of Thrones or like Lost, or I know Battlestar Galactica had that same sort of vitriol from some people towards the ending. I feel like there's never going to be a way to please everyone. Someone's always going to be upset about the way that something ends. And I feel like shows that I love so much, like The X-Files, I feel like when I was younger, if shows sort of fell off the wagon, I'd just be like, lost its way a little bit, but I still love it. But now I feel like, you know, these shows that are so big, there's such an emotional reaction that's like, it turned into the worst thing in the world, and there's so much anger behind it. And then I'm very much more of the like, okay, I see where it went wrong, and this is what I would have done, and I still
love still
it.
Enjoyed the journey.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
People have lost. Way more outlets to complain nowadays, and there's so much content to consume that you're right. Like people just talk and talk and complain. Luckily on this podcast, we're here for good vibes.
Yeah, we like good vibes here. Yeah.
I like good vibes too.
Speaking of, we've talked to some of the Magicians actors, and they've kind of had I don't want to say mixed experience with the fans, but some some negative reaction to some things that have happened during the show. And what has your interaction with the Magicians fan base been like, if at all?
Gosh, you know, overall in general, interactions with fans have always been really delightful. Mm. I think because Ember is under so many hours of prosthetic work, I meet a lot of people that don't realize unless I'm talking
unless
to them,
talking.
And then they sort of their head sort of tilts like an Alsatian, and they're like, "Your voice sounds so wait, oh
yeah, you're that guy."
And then they sort of click in, but it's really funny because all different kinds of fans react in different ways. I was on a Disney show for a year, and now all those kids are sort of grown up and are in their 20s, and they're always like, wait, oh my gosh, you're Zoltan Grundy. Oh my gosh, I watched you all the time when I was a kid. And then the Sunny in Philadelphia fans will be the ones that will be driving past in a car and just be going, Psycho Pete, Psycho Pete. And so everyone is so different, but everyone's always been really delightful. I've never had anything. I think there was one. Oh, I think someone tagged me in a Magician's post one time. Oh, no. That was pretty nasty.
Yeah.
Sure. Not that they were like, why doesn't Ember wear a bra? He needs a bra. And I was like, that's pretty mean, because I'm pretty sensitive about my body. And I remember seeing that and I was like, oh, that's not nice. And to tag someone in it,
right, exactly.
Felt like, don't know if you needed to do that.
No.
One negative experience, but the rest has been delightful. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That hopefully the rest rounds out that one outlier, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So to take it back, I got a couple more of these rapid fires, which are not.
Luke's all business here.
Oh my gosh, I've been doing a terrible job at rapid fire.
No, we love, we say rapid fire, but we love when it just goes on rants.
Absolutely. So what was your most memorable scene that you filmed?
It was nice to do. Oh boy. Let's talk about season two in the Wellspring. It was nice to do that because I went on location and all of the other Ember scenes were on sound stages. So it was nice to go outside and be in the park and do that scene outside. Also, before we did that scene outside, the first time I appeared in season two, they flew me up. And this is why I wish there were extra stuff on Blu-rays. They flew me up. And they did a test where they put me in stilts and they had me walking in stilts. And oh my gosh, guys, if this video exists somewhere, I'm 6'5".
I was going to say, what are you, 8 foot tall at that point?
Oh my gosh, these stilts were so high. And they took me to the park and they laid down these wooden planks, wooden boards for me to walk on. And they had four stuntmen, one behind, two on each side, and one in front of me. And I had to lean against a rock while they put these things on, and then they had to lift me up. And then I didn't have the staff, and they were just like, let's just see if you can walk. And this is just me without any prosthetics, without the horns, without the contact lenses or anything. And oh my gosh, it must have taken me 35 minutes to walk maybe 20 meters back to like the truck where they were like, let's just get to the truck and then we'll, oh my gosh, what a night. That was the end of that experiment really fast. And then we went back to the stilettos. I, cause I know my boyfriend is a stuntman and the stunt people took video of it. And I think they sent it, but I've been trying to track that video down for so long. Oh boy. The things that could have been.
Yeah,
that's so funny.
Wait, was your first answer the Wellspring
same scene? Day, right? That's the same day.
Same.
Yeah, I mean that was a couple of weeks after I went up to do the sort of prosthetic the stilt test beforehand, but it didn't work out. But that was fun. It was nice to be outdoors, and that was the first time that I had met Olivia. And yeah, it was just nice to go back and be outdoors and filming. The Wellspring.
The reason I brought
the Wellspring
is because I was talking to my sister a little bit earlier today, and I told her she hasn't watched all the Magicians, but she's seen about like a season and a half, maybe two seasons of it. And she's like a little bit of a looser fan. She's not cool like us. She doesn't know how to, you know, deep dive. But I told her, I said, yeah, we're interviewing a Magician's actor. He plays Ember. And she was thinking for a second. She's like, oh, the one that shits in the Wellspring. And I was like, that's the one.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, you know, again, as an actor, when you get that kind of material, you're like, oh man, how do I make this work, like, and not sound like goofy that like, oh, I pooped in it, and it was just fun. And they had this shed, and then I had to get in. I think, if I remember rightly, I didn't get in trouble, but I think some people got upset because the stilettos are really uncomfortable to walk around in, and especially there where the ground was uneven. And I have a sort of pair of platform boots for when they're doing close-ups, so I keep the height, but they're like these huge foam like work boots, and I think in a wide shot they got upset because they could see the foam boots and they were like, ah, now we're gonna have to digitally do something about it. And then when I went back in later seasons, they were always like, no, keep the hooves on. Just keep the hooves on. Yeah. And they were so uncomfortable. Mm. But that's, you know.
Yeah.
Here we are. Here we are.
Here we are.
You got to do.
Yeah,
exactly. Back. Yeah.
So I got two more here for you. And this is one I really love to ask because if I need you to agree with me here. So oh, no. Who was your favorite villain of the series?
Oh, man. I mean,
you put so much pressure on.
I know.
It is a lot of pressure. What if I was to say Polliver?
Wow, that's a unique answer. I don't think we've heard that one yet.
I mean, he is. He's the freaking worst.
He's a terrible person.
Dave picked Polliver. Yeah, Plover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, because I think, for me, you can have Sir Effingham and you can have all these creatures and fairies and whatnot, but when it's something that's so human and so dark,
yeah,
I think that intrinsically, for me as a viewer, is always more unsettling when it's mm-hmm. something human and real mm-hmm. and grim and dark, as opposed to sort of the supernatural elements. I think, I'm sorry, I'm going to close this so it doesn't look like I'm staring in the sun. There's an episode of the X-Files, and you know, X-Files deals with aliens and monsters and whatnot. And then I think in season two, there's an episode with Donnie Faster, who's just a serial killer, and he goes after Scully. And that was always more unsettling to me, that it was like, oh man, it's this guy who's desiccating bodies, and it's grim and it's real. And I think that stuff gets under my skin more.
Yeah, I mean, Plover sets in motion the magicians. I mean, the Beast is who Luke is going to say is his favorite villain.
Martin Chatwin is absolutely my favorite.
But there is no Beast without Plover.
Exactly.
Yep. Awful, awful things to him in the first place. So he is the OG villain of the magicians. He sets our story. So that's a great answer.
But you did get to share some scenes with my favorite villain, Martin Chatwin.
Yeah.
I just thought he stole every single scene that he was in the show, besides the ones he was in with Ember. And just the way he would sing, and you know, like he had his little dance and just like his bright blue eyes. How was he just, because when we also talked to Magaina Tova, who plays Zelda, and her death scene uh-huh. was actually dancing with Martin Chatwin, and I loved like asking her questions about that. But how was your experience with him? Because he is such an important character, because you see him in episode one and he almost kills Dean Fogg, and it just sets the stakes so high.
Yeah, actually, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think it's him in the first episode. I think they had a different actor, and then they CG'd
the
moths, and then maybe had him do voiceover. Because I think they shot that first episode in New Orleans as well before they went up to Vancouver. But he was really nice. I remember we had a conversation about contact lenses, because I know that he had some irritation with contact lenses, and I also, because they're big, they're like the size of quarters, that they're called lenticular contact lenses, and they're like ram's eyes, but they're big. And I could have worn the prosthetics all day and been so happy, but the contacts are the thing that they just irritated my eyes. My eyes were like, there's something foreign in my eye, get it out. And I think we chatted about that a little bit. Yeah, it was nice. You know, everything on that set was so nice. The other thing is, when you're in such heavy prosthetics, sometimes you don't get a chance to socialize as much as you would like in between takes. And I remember on that day in particular, because it was summer, they had a cooling tent for me because it was hot outside. And so then the latex would start to peel away. And so we would do a take, and then they'd be like, get him to the cooling tent. And then you sort of sit there on your own while everyone else is sort of socializing.
I hope they
elsewhere.
Brought you little cakes while you're in there.
Right. I should have done. I did eat little cakes, I think, at the end of season two.
Yeah.
And I think Josh brought me, there was like a platter.
Yeah.
And I think I ended up like eating 9 or 10 mini cupcakes on that day.
Yeah, and they're actually like dessert. They're cupcakes that you were. That's awesome.
Yeah, because you.
It's always fun in games when you do that first one. It's always like, okay, this will be fun. And then by the time you get to 8 or 9, and then people are coming along being like, are you sure you don't want a spit bucket? And I feel so bad for the people who have to come around with spit buckets. And I'd be like, no, I'll swallow it. But then dying inside when you do it.
That flows pretty good into my last question I have here for you. Was there any of the main, we like to say 9 characters, but you know, maybe the main 7 or 8 that are in it through the whole, all 5 seasons, of actors that you didn't have a chance to meet of our main cast here?
You know, I think I did meet even the people that I didn't meet on screen. I met at the hotel. Like, there was one night, I think it was the second season, where Hale and Arjun just pulled up to the hotel in a car, and they were like, Dominic, come for a meal with us. And then like they kidnapped me and took me in their car, and we went to a restaurant, and chatted for a while, and Mackenzie Astin was there as well. So maybe that was season one. Maybe it was season two. I don't remember, but Mackenzie was there too, who was also a delight. And we've stayed in touch afterwards. And Brittany lives down the road from me, a couple of miles down the road. And so I will text with her from time to time. And her partner, James, is a big Alien fan like I am. I'll spin my laptop around so you can see this.
There we go.
Gorgeous piece. So we exchange texts about aliens. So I think through, and then, yeah, I've
did you meet Jade, because I know she doesn't go to Fillory often, who plays Katie for those listening,
through table reads. And then, you know, like through Twitter, and people start sending tweets, and then you follow each other, and then like people slide into DMs and they're like, hey, you did a great job. Oh my gosh, your singing voice was so great. Oh, that's something I wish that I could have been in one of the musical episodes. Yeah. That would be
we always ask about the musical episodes. Yeah.
Can you sing?
That would have been, for me, cherry on top of a little cake.
A little cake.
Yeah.
That was good.
We could do a singing right now. We could just have...
Right now. There's nothing to stop me. Yeah, that would have been my... That would have been nice.
And that's funny, because it could have happened easily. You could have definitely added Ember to a singing scene at some point.
Maybe the trippy one in the desert with Margo would have been.
Yeah, I'll just get my own green screen, and I'll just superimpose myself.
Yeah.
Into one of those musical numbers. Yes.
I mean, you already make your own Blu-ray cover, so.
Exactly. I'll just make my own season six.
Yeah. Oh, we'll just podcast on it. We'll watch it.
Ember with a repertoire of songbooks.
Wow, you just play every character.
Exactly.
Wow, love that. That's perfect. Do you want to sing us off at the end of the pod?
Oh my gosh. No, I won't. Okay. I won't. Not on the spot.
All right. Well, I know you have a lot of projects you're working on now. You mentioned them in the beginning. You want to pitch something, what you're working on recently?
Sure. I think Fantasy Island pops up in a couple of weeks' time. And then I just did an Apple show in Colombia that I don't think I'm allowed to talk about, and a voiceover thing that I'm not allowed to talk about, and a video game that I'm not allowed. A lot of stuff that I'm not allowed to talk about.
Watch out for those.
Yeah. I'm narrating my first audiobook.
I was going to ask you that. Yeah. You have a great voice for an audiobook.
Oh man. I'm kind of scared about it. I read it over this weekend. And I just feel like once I'm in a booth and an engineer is looking at me pushing buttons, then I'm going to forget how to read. but what could go wrong?
My thing with audiobooks, I listen to a lot of audiobooks, is I'm like, how are they so confident and so good at knowing like which cadences to use? I'm like, they must read this book and take notes. Do you take notes?
Oh, man, I read through it this weekend. It took me 3 days to read through it. And I've got like a list of 35 characters. And then I was, you know, at first, like I'd read it and be like, okay, so I'll do that in a Welsh accent, and I'll do that in a Scottish accent, and I'll do that in a Cockney accent. And then I was running out of, like, there were more characters than I knew accents. And then I was like, okay, so my point of reference for this character is Tyrion Lannister. And my point of reference for this character is going to be Gillian Anderson in The Fall, and my point of reference for this character. Wow. And so now I just have a list of not characters that I'm going to copy, but I'm going to take reference from.
That is
give a nice little homage,
little peek behind the curtain. Cause I mean, I
exactly
with Kathleen, because I've recently in these COVID times basically become addicted to audiobooks. I don't even read physical books anymore. I did most of Wheel of Time. Me, Jimmy, Luke are currently reading a lot of the Cosmere stuff by Brandon Sanderson, and all of those books are read by Michael Kramer. And Michael Kramer is just an amazing storyteller. It's just every time I listen to the books, it blows me away. It just that it feels like he puts you in the story, you know, because you can read like a dialogue quote that says something and then said angrily, and you've already read the dialogue, so you didn't read it angrily in your head.
But when
the audiobook reads it angrily, you really feel the emotion. Yeah. So I just love it so much.
Yeah, I feel more at ease with the dialogue than I do with the like long chunks of narration that are like The kitchen was blue. The sun was streaming in through the curtains. I'm like, oh no, as long as I can get through that stuff, then I think I'll be okay.
I'm sure you'll be great.
Yeah, I think you'll be all right.
I agree.
Well, thank you so much. This was incredible.
Yeah, of course.
Hearing your perspective on, of course, we'll talk magicians anytime with anybody. Mm-hmm. So getting to talk with the God of Fillory was just an unbelievable experience. And thank you for everything you did.
Yeah, of course. Anytime. And if you want to talk about any sci-fi genre stuff, I'll probably be like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah.
Open invitation. You're always welcome back, of course.
Yeah. Well, thank you so, so much.
Yeah, awesome. Quite the pleasure. Yeah.
Yes, thank you so much. And good luck with the audiobook coming up.
Yeah.
Okay. It's called the Berlin Plus. Listen to it. It's good. Don't listen to it. It's bad.
And hopefully all the shows we can't know about go well.
Yeah. Yes.
We'll watch it in them.
And pop quiz before you go, though, because you got to get Game of Thrones in one more time while I can. Do you know the only magician actor that was also on Game of Thrones?
It's me.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yep. Because I'm terrible, because I met her in the first table read. And quick side note, like when I did Sunny in Philadelphia, I geeked out so hard and I stopped being a real human being on set. And so then that was like a real, like, be normal when you meet your idols. And so I remember meeting Esme and I was like, oh yes, I'm familiar with your work. Yeah. And I was very civil and I didn't geek out. And inside I was like, but I was very good. Calm and collected.
By the way, when you have a second, can you sign this Blu-ray for me?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Well, have a nice night.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, everybody.
And boom. That'll about do it for us, guys. Can't thank Dominic enough for jumping on a Zoom with some nerds to talk our favorite show, The Magicians. Really appreciate how genuine and passionate he is about a show that Benchtown cannot get enough of. If you like what you heard, give Benchtown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram and subscribe and rate wherever you find your podcast. If you're looking for more of The Magician's content, catch up on some of our previous conversations with The Magician's actors, Olivia Taylor-Dudley, Magana Tova, and Rick Worthy. We also covered season 5 of The Magicians on an episode-by-episode basis if you're looking for a deep dive on the final season. Our Patreon is also now live and absolutely perfect for anyone looking for more Benchtown TV content. Once again, we are Benchtown TV. And thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.